I don't know. Welcome back to Security Guy TV at Black Hat 2017 for absolutely our last broadcast. And I'm glad we got these guys in, though. So welcome. Say your website name for me.
Irredetto.
Irredetto. I want to get that right. Irredetto. Irdetto.com.
Correct.
And what do you guys do?
So Irredetto is a software security company. We've actually been in the business for about 50 years, helping pay media companies keep their services secure.
Wow, really? 50 years.
50 years. It's actually been quite a while. We started out helping a pay TV company in South Africa. That's where we kind of started.
Okay.
And now today, we're actually the leader in software-only conditional access from a media standpoint, but we've been expanding out into a number of other markets, such as automotive, IoT, payments and banking. Pretty much anywhere there's software that needs to be protected, we've got the tools and the technology to do that.
Now, that's right up your alley, financial stuff, right?
It is indeed. Mark, yes,
I
have a question, follow-up question for you.
Sure.
Could you just let everyone know your role within the company?
Sure. So, name is Mark Hearn, and I am the head of our IoT security strategy.
Thank you. John?
John O'Connor. I'm the global head of our software protection product line.
Chuck. We're going, this is your bag here.
Fine. So, many years in the industry, across other industry segments. And how many countries are you active, like in terms of your client base, that is?
Actually, our client base is fully global. We've actually got every continent covered. We've got a lot of pay media companies that are looking for emerging solutions in a variety of different Asian and African countries. And then we do a lot of online media protection, as well as other security solutions in North America, Europe.
Now, what distinguishes what you do from, a typical protection company? We've had a lot of them here. You're in that media space. There must be some unique protections they need over, the donut company or something, right?
Right. So where we actually excel is when an end device has to have some form of security on it. And so if you take, say, a media company, they're going to be playing a movie or a whatnot, but they don't necessarily trust the person who's getting it. So the right certificates and so on need to be protected in order for you to trust that the content was purchased and et cetera. Similarly, say in an IoT environment, an elevator maybe have security requirements because it's now connected to the internet, but someone has free access to look at it, to be able to hack into it and so on. Same way with a car, right? If that's something that a hacker has access to, then it needs to be protected, even if it's not connected to a network. And those are the types of things that we do.
So when I was at Fox, we had DirecTV and the smart cards. Remember that?
Yes.
And I guess we owned that technology one time from an Israeli company that invented it.
Yeah.
And one of my engineers in the broadcast department thought it was a great idea to make a device that would wipe a smart card and put every service on it, and then he'd sell them for $100 each.
Yeah.
And you take it home and you get everything for free on DirecTV. And I always wondered how we caught him, right? We went after him. But I always wondered how that endpoint device ever got detected. I guess a bill did go out for it or something. But this type of stuff you guys are trying to detect, right? How would you
That's
detect
right.
an old DirecTV box with free programming on it and no billing?
Right. So we actually have a whole suite of different things that we do. First of all, we actually apply security protections on a regular ongoing basis to update that security. And as they do that update, the new channels will require new keys to be able to get that content. So that would nullify any type of work that he might have done. We also have members of our team that are on the darknet. They're constantly following the different forums. They're following where the hackers are trying to sell those smart cards.
Oh, interesting.
We even have a couple of agents that will go in there and they'll try and actually buy them and build a forensic file to help the police put together a case against some of these individuals.
So, John, right?
Yes.
So tell us your role and what kind of things you get involved in.
So, my role is basically looking after our software protection product, which is very core to what we do at Irredetto. Now, this technology comes from a company called Cloakware that Mark and myself worked for, and it was acquired by Irredetto in 2007. Now, this technology has been around for about 20 years. So this is actually the 20-year anniversary of the Cloakware technology here at Black Hat.
Wow. And old-timers, these guys.
Yeah.
It's fabulous.
We've been to battle and back.
So this is
you're Irish, right? So that explains it all, I know.
Yeah. This is the key technology that enables Irredetto to do software-based CA systems, so conditional access systems, to replace the smart card. And so we've taken this technology, we're applying it in places like automotive, we're applying it in places like the Internet of Things. Another key element of this is we are also the inventor of white box cryptography, which enables you to do encryption and decryption while being observed doing it. So we've taken all these collection of technologies, and one of the announcements we've made this week is that we are announcing the latest version of our Cloakware software protection tools and technology suite, which is really about helping people protect software from tampering, software from stealing intellectual property, protecting your data, protecting your keys, and really providing a solution that enables our customers to be sure that nobody is, you know, stealing content, stealing data, stealing keys, or tampering with the correct operation of their software devices.
On now, that, okay, great, sorry. On that note, we had a session yesterday regarding the collaboration of software development teams with the security operation subject matter experts. Right. Mm-hmm. So at what stage of that software development are you integrated? Do you wait until the software becomes commercial, or are you part of the planning design process?
So we like to help our customers understand, you know, where their threats are by doing threat risk assessments, by looking and helping them to do security design reviews to help them better understand where these potential threats will come. Now, we also have teams that will look at the final product and assess, you know, the more traditional pen testing route. Now, our technology really embeds as part of the development lifecycle. So we try to take away the pain points from the developer, and we provide the technology to really help secure their software. And our unique approach starts at applying that technology at the source code level. And that kind of allows us to do some very unique things, such as diversity, which means that we can take one instance of your code and generate five new instances that are functionally the same, but when you reverse engineer them, they are different programs. So scripting-based attacks don't work against them. It also enables you to have a renewability of your security in the event of a hack. You can bring out a new version very quickly within 24 hours that will slow the attacker down again for a period of time.
What are you seeing in the piracy world? Is that still something, a big market, and people use it? It was a big thing years ago. Now you don't really hear much about it.
Yeah. So actually, content piracy, I think, is evolved with a lot of things, and particularly a lot of content now being available over the web and whatnot. It's kind of moving away from a set-top box.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's like anything. Hackers will always go the path of least resistance. So, you know, if we start to really ratchet up things from an over-the-top and internet perspective, but if we were to let go on a set-top box, they would just switch back, right?
Yeah.
Where we're actually seeing probably some of the most highly valued pirated content is around live sports these days.
And so that makes sense.
We actually have a division that is all about trying to track down those live streams of live sports through a watermarking technology and be able to identify that, find it out on the illegal stream, bring it back to the original source, and shut down the source while the match is still on. The whole goal there is to actually really damage the hacker's business. What we want to do is make it difficult for them to make a profit, and therefore they move on.
I'm getting some ideas from my live stream box over there I never thought about. Yeah. So people are taking these devices into a sporting event and sending it to a channel and charging people to watch it?
So usually,
because I could do that with my equipment. I could do that with just a camera and a little bitty box about that big.
Right. So that sometimes happens,
yep.
Especially when you have like things that are coming through Periscope and others.
Right.
But probably the most common one is hackers will actually gain access into a set-top box or over an over-the-top signal, and they'll actually rebroadcast that. So it's called rebroadcast piracy.
Wow.
And so they might actually have a legitimate subscription.
Yeah.
Right? They pay, you know, what, $30 to watch a boxing match,
right.
And then they turn around and they resell it to about 2,000 people, right? So what you want to do is identify that legitimate subscription and shut it off while the match is ongoing, and basically cheese off all the 2,000 guys that are going to come after him.
How does that happen? Is that pretty common?
It's actually fairly common, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and that's probably one of the biggest impacts to sports these days, and with the value of sports rights going through the absolute roof, it's critical that this type of protection be put into place.
Thank you for all the hard work you do on behalf of the professional athletes and everyone else who works
That's
so hard.
That's fabulous. John, you got a comment there. I saw you.
Yeah, and of course, the biggest difficulty here in shutting down these streams is that sports content is only as valuable while it's live. Yeah. After that time period, the value decreases.
That's true.
So, you know, that's the technical challenge of getting out there, finding these illegal streams, shutting them down, getting the takedown notices down, so that basically you can start to really protect that content from both the content rights holder as well as the operator.
That's different than the movie. The movie lasts a long time.
Yeah. That's right.
But my wife will not watch soccer unless it's live. In fact, if I stop it to go to the bathroom and put it on rewind, she flips out. No, it's not live. I got to watch it. I'm not a sports guy. I don't have the sports gene, so I don't get that part. But now that you say it, it makes perfectly good sense. The value.
What about recidivism? Am I pronouncing that correctly? It's a long day. The individuals, the criminals who do that, don't they repeat it? It's obviously very profitable to them, or they switch locations. How does that work?
So that's where the cat and mouse game comes in, right? And so again, that comes back to why we actually have a cybersecurity division that's part of, you know, the dark net and tracking and trying to follow where it is these services are popping up. And so it's all part of building up intelligence and saying, okay, we shut them down there and then they pop up over here and pop up over there. And so that's what we're trying to move on. But the more you move them, the harder it is for them to keep a regular customer base.
Oh, right? That's
damaging
their
business.
Because they got to connect. Right. That's right. Makes sense.
And it's one of the most fundamental things is thinking about these hackers as businessmen. So if you can actually increase their costs and make it difficult for them to do business, ultimately, you know, they're going to find something else.
Now, one model we had at the studio back in the day was to go after the end users. And let's just say a friend of our family's who has plenty of money but like to go to those pirate sites for movies, or to the Santee Alley in L.A. to get a camcorded version of a movie. That's how cheap this family was. Okay.
Wow.
And I said, why don't we put her in jail? And that'll slow down the business. I mean, is that a model still? Because, you know, Sony went after some, who was the Napster, you know, and then now there's no customers because they're not participating.
Right.
And the hacker has no business, so he's out of business.
Right. So, I mean, I think going after the individual consumer is something you know, can be done and probably is still being done to an extent. Certainly a lot of the takedown notices and so on that you would send to target them. But in reality, you want to bring it back to, you know, where's the biggest multiplier of the action you're going to take, right? Interestingly enough, though, about a lot of these piracy statistics that you collect, one of the technologies we have is out, and it's tracking where all of the piracy is being done. So we can zoom in on a particular city, a particular region, and understand where different pirated signals are being consumed.
Hotspot, yeah.
But what's interesting is certainly you want to go after that to try and stop it. But I like how a lot of different media businesses are now starting to use that data and the data analytics to pull that back in and make business decisions on it. So if you think about from a Hollywood studio standpoint, if they know that their business model is based on a certain number of days that something is in the theater, a certain number of days it's on Blu-ray, and so on, if they know that the piracy is not where they would expect it to be, well, leave it in Blu-ray for a little while longer and make more money. So I like how a lot of the piracy data is now spinning around into being used for positive business reasons, not just simply let's go and try and shut it down everywhere we can.
I started the anti-piracy program at Disney.
Okay.
And the other studios adapted. And back in the day, we had night vision goggles, magnetometers for searching people coming in for 1,200 pre-theatrical screenings.
Okay.
And we had 10,000 screenings and zero piracy, whereas it was started with Finding Nemo, it was the first movie.
Okay.
But before that, we would have upwards of 3,000 or 4,000 pirated versions of the movie out there.
Right.
And it cost about $3 billion a year in losses.
It's a huge
amount of money.
It's big.
And we gave them analytics. One of the analytics was, in 10,000 screenings, I took like 5 guns off people. I took 1,000 cameras off people, right?
Right.
And they said, this is a real problem. I said, yeah, it's a real problem. So we continued the program, and I left after they kept doing it. It was very successful. So we were using that back in the day, and they saw the value in it.
Right.
It's like they used to hire a company that would watch the ticket taking and make sure that the tickets matched the guy at the cash register, because they used to cheat a little bit at the theaters, right?
Right.
So I'm glad the movies are getting into this and protecting that kind of stuff. It's really fascinating. Now, we're almost done here. What keeps you guys awake at night? What really makes you worry about stuff?
Actually, I think if you talk about a lot of the media space, I think the customers, the studios, the operators, and so on, they all have a pretty good understanding of security, right? And people kind of get it.
Right.
I think now as we start to shift into some of the newer areas, right, I'm worried about the lack of education and people's understanding of the security implications. Something like IoT and the impact that a connected car might actually have on a consumer in a life and death situation. Those are the types of things where the education needs to get out there. Manufacturers are under such pressure to get products out to consumers quickly and at really tight budgets that security is not necessarily getting the consideration that it should. In the media space, they understand that it's a requirement. But if you're actually building a product for a consumer that has some level of safety application to it, make sure you got the security in place to remain safe. And that's that. We've been talking to a lot of companies in various industries, healthcare, consumer goods, smart buildings, to kind of really make sure they understand the state of hacking and the hacking trends that are out there and how some of these things could completely destroy their business. There was a botnet attack just before Christmas that ultimately made use of a bunch of processors on webcams surrounded throughout the U.S. Those webcam companies are now out of business because they were the source of an attack that took down major websites within the internet. The brand damage was really bad. No one was hurt.
Right.
But now imagine if that was the exact same type of thing that would impact a gas-powered range in a home that's connected, or you know, a system that is controlling heating or whatnot in a building in, say, Canada, where it gets pretty cold in the winter. Those are really impactful things. I think security understanding has got to expand out into these markets.
And Mark Kern, John O'Connor, Erdetto, IRDETO.com here at Black Hat 2017. Beautiful Las Vegas, securityguytv.com. I think it's our last interview. Let's just make it our last interview.
I just saw someone walk in.
No. No, we can't. We got to wrap it up. So thanks for tuning in, you guys. Again, it's been great. Black Hat's been wonderful. Thank Ms. Kimberly for helping us get this great setup over here. And you guys are doing a great job.
Great, thank you.
I love this
guy.
Thanks for coming on the show. All right, Mr. Producer, we're out. Yeah.